The following programming is sponsored by Monica Lowry and Melinda Allen. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk with Mindy, Monica, and Maisha. My name is Monica.
I'm Mindy.
I'm Maisha.
And today we have a special guest. We have Dr. Matthew Herford from the University of Pennsylvania Medical Center. It is Mental Health Month. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
So we have you on the line to discuss May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And you are here to discuss the overall of how mental health is and how it can affect our everyday lives. So can you just give us a little bit more, Dr. Herford, how do you cover the mental health and behavioral health and how it impacts?
Sure. Well, first off, thank you. Yes, happy to. And first off, thank you so much for having me on the show and, more importantly, for shining a light on this really important topic of mental health. As you mentioned, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. It's a day that we've been observing nationally since 1949. So, wow. 75th year of trying to help raise awareness in our country. But the fact that currently 1 in 5 American adults in a given year will have experience with a mental illness or a mental health condition. So this is really very, very common. And I'm sure it affects directly many of your listeners, and if not directly, then indirectly through their family, their friends, and their communities. And the more we're able to talk about the fact that there is no health without mental health, mm-hmm. the more we can do to lower the stigma and get people talking about their mental health in the same way that they just talk about their physical health and get the treatment that they need and that works to help them live a full and meaningful, healthy life.
And what defines mental health illness? Because I believe some people confuse that with behavioral health, especially when it comes to teenagers and children. How can you differentiate from behavioral health and mental health illness?
Oh, this is such an important question and one that a lot of people have, because some of these terms are used in different ways and sometimes interchangeably. You mentioned two of them, mental health, behavioral health. And we also talk about mental illness and talk about psychology, emotions, psychiatry. And you know what we're all really collectively talking about, of course, when we talk about mental illness, are serious disturbances in how somebody is thinking, how they're feeling, or how they're behaving. And that these symptoms cause real distress or problems in their day-to-day functioning. So it could be anything from their relationships to their appetite, sleep cycles, ability to just enjoy things in life. And then, of course, in more serious mental illnesses, they could also create symptoms that make it hard to tell the difference between what's real or not. People can experience hallucinations, like hearing voices when no one else can, or believing things that don't seem to be based in reality. Hmm. But we're also human beings. So we have good days and bad days. We get happy, sad, fearful, anxious. There are things in our lives and in the world that can make us worried about the future. All of that's normal, natural, and healthy. So a lot of people ask this question about, well, then what's the difference, whether you're a child or an adult, between feeling those things that make us human beings and a mental illness? And it's really a couple of things that I would recommend focusing on. The first is the severity of the symptoms. We all can have a tough reaction when something, we see something on the news, or we get we find out something stressful at work, or maybe even something serious happens health-wise to our family members. But in most cases, we process those emotions, we can continue to function in our lives, and those symptoms, those reactions, generally don't persist over a long period of time, and they don't interrupt our ability to function on a day-to-day basis, usually for more than hours or maybe a couple of days. But in mental illness, people oftentimes have an experience where those symptoms last much longer and they're much more significant. So as an example, the difference between maybe having a sad day is maybe a stressed out Maybe you skip a meal, but the next day you've had some time to connect with friends, with family, go for a jog or listen to some good music, go to church, do something, and you find yourself feeling kind of back on track. But when people have major depression, for example, their symptoms last for weeks, and they tend to interfere with those really important daily functions. Appetite really can go away or can get much higher. Sleep gets very disturbed, again, more than just a night or two. Really extreme feelings of loss of interest in life. The things that brought you joy just don't anymore. And there's more symptoms like that. And the same is true for anxiety disorders and other areas. So those two areas are really about the severity of the symptoms and how long they last. And when either one of those starts to go beyond kind of normal, that's a good indication that it might be time to talk to your doctor, maybe reach out for some mental health support, even if it's just to get your questions answered.
Okay. So do you find that, and this is Monica, do you find that mental health can be, what is the word I'm looking for? Not inherited. What's the word?
Hereditary.
Hereditary. Yes. Can mental health.
Hereditary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how do you separate, like, when you, if you can tell, like, if it's hereditary mental health or just environmental, is there a way to tell?
That's a great question, Monica. And the short answer is that many mental illnesses have a genetic component. And I really want to emphasize that second word, component. Uh-huh. And what I mean by that is that some mental illnesses, let's take bipolar disorder, for example, we know can run in families, but that doesn't mean that if you have a relative that has bipolar disorder, that you'll have bipolar disorder.
Okay.
Nor does it mean that if you have bipolar disorder, your children will have bipolar disorder. What it means is that these illnesses do run in families, and we know that there's a genetic component to them. So the risk of getting, of developing bipolar disorder is increased when you have, especially when you have what's called a first degree relative, like your mother, your father, or a sibling has a bipolar disorder. Your chances of developing that are increased. But again, it does not mean that you definitely will get that. And that's true for some illnesses. And for others, there seems to be no genetic component. So if you have questions about that, or you know that some mental health issues run in your family, that's another really good topic to talk to your doctor about.
Okay.
So how can you recognize when a family member, friend, or other loved one may be struggling with mental illness?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I would say is keep in mind that if you're talking about a loved one, you probably know that person better than 99% of the rest of the world. So trust your instincts and have a really low threshold for saying something, even if that's just starting a conversation with the person, like, hey, I've noticed you've been a lot more sad recently, or it seems like you've been more tearful, or, you know, you've been really secluding, haven't been coming out and spending as much time. We've missed you at the bowling league, or you haven't been coming to synagogue, or whatever the case might be. You know, just using those observations and trusting your instincts to start a conversation is really important. Don't worry if you don't have a mental health background. Your job as a friend or a loved one is not to diagnose somebody.
Right.
It's just to know them and support them. You know, if you had a loved one that you saw walking down the street with a new limp, you wouldn't think twice about saying, hey, what's going on with your leg? Like, you weren't limping
right.
last week when I saw you.
Right.
Are you okay? You know, should you get checked out? You don't need to have x-ray vision and be able to say, oh, I see that you've got a tibular fracture on your right. Like, that's a doctor's job. They'll do that once they get diagnosed. All you need to do is show that you care enough about that person, ask about them. And the same's true with mental illness. Sometimes people say, well, you know, it's different. It's not like a broken bone. It's harder to see when somebody is suffering from mental illness. But I would challenge that argument and say that we oftentimes know when ourselves or somebody we care about is going through a significant emotional or mental health crisis because they're not acting the way they usually act. You know something's off.
Okay.
The difference and the challenge for us as a society and a culture is, you know, we haven't always been as comfortable talking about that as we have about that limp. So Mental Health Awareness Month's a great opportunity to start those conversations.
And what can we do to help that person? If, okay, so for example, I have a friend that that's facing some medical issues. Now that friend cannot work, just had a baby. She's feeling overwhelmed with everything. She's a single parent. She was hit with a illness, and now the illness is in remission. However, it deteriorated part of her hip. So now she has to have a hip replacement. So now she can't work. So she expressed to me that I'm feeling depressed, and at times I feel like I want to kill myself. And she said, you know, I don't, what keeps me alive is my children. However, everything is becoming overwhelming for me because I can't work. You know, I can't take them out the way I want to take them out because I'm not able to walk the way I used to walk. And, you know, she had lost some things because of her financial, it became a financial burden on her. And when you apply for some type of disability, it takes months or even years to even get an answer back. But you can't go to work because with disability, you have to be out of work for a certain amount of time. So how can you help a person that was a nurse on her feet, travel nurse and living, you know, a good life and very stabilized to her life just deteriorating and now it becomes a mental factor. So I felt helpless at the point where I'm like, you know, seek some counseling. She said she wanted to go into an institution, but she don't know what to do with the children. I offered to watch the children. If y'all go into the institution now, what I'm going to do about my house? I offered all these things. You can move in with me to try to help her, but she doesn't want to feel a burden on people. So what are your recommendations?
Wow. Well, first off, I'm so sorry that your friend is going through such a challenging time. I can just hear all the many ways in which her illness has impacted her life and, you know, her family, her social life, her work life, her identity as a person. But I will say she's so fortunate to have you as such a concerned and involved friend. And that's just so important and really critical to just acknowledge that you being a sympathetic and supportive listener and source of strength for her is in it and of itself an important and meaningful intervention. So keep doing what you're doing because she obviously trusts you and is finding it helpful to talk. You know, a lot of us have that instinct that when we hear about somebody going through a challenging time that we want to fix it. We want to make the pain go away. We want to bring back that loved one. We want to restore somebody's ability to walk, of course, because we care about that person. Some things are in our control and some aren't. Those things are probably not in our control. But your feeling those things is a really good reflection and insight about what that person is also feeling. You know, they want those things too. And being able to validate that what your friend is going through is a series of losses. You know, when we experience health challenges, whether they're physical health or mental health, we often talk about the pain or the symptoms, the ways in which it's, you know, the things I can't do anymore or way, you know, things that might hurt or feel uncomfortable. But we don't oftentimes spend, I think, enough attention on mourning the losses. You know, in this case, it sounds like your friend is mourning the loss of her identity as working, you know, as a nurse, her ability, loss of her functionality to walk and kind of get around herself. And so I would encourage in those situations to give the person the opportunity to actually talk about how much they miss those things, how hard it is, how stressful it is, and how sad they are about it, because those are all really natural, normal, healthy reactions to it. Oftentimes people can't begin to think about and plan for the future until they have mourned what has lost or changed, even if that's just temporary. So it's why when we're in a situation like that or we're hurting, somebody comes along and just says, you know, why don't you buck up and move on, just get on with your life. It doesn't feel good or helpful. And that's often because we aren't there yet, right? We have to just reach that stage of acceptance that life's different now. Life's going to look different in the future. Mm-hmm. Once we do, it's a lot easier to start thinking about, oh, okay, well, I can't do this, but what could I do instead? And is, as a friend, is there something that you can do to help them get there? And the other thing I would say, because it's really important that your friend opened up about feeling some, you know, at times feeling so desperate about their situation that she actually had some thoughts about suicide. First of all, it's so important and valuable that she, again, trusts you enough to talk about that very, very tough topic. And it's really comforting to always hear when somebody talks about what they want to live for. That's always a very good sign. But if at any time, you know, if somebody is, you're listening to someone and they are talking about something so severe that they have thoughts about hurting themselves, it's a really important issue, and one that you should really think about encouraging that person to get some help around, because you never want to miss that opportunity to get them that support. Unfortunately, we know that suicides for some populations are on the rise right now. The good news is that there are so many helpful and effective treatments for depression and for suicidal thinking. So if you ever have that worry, first of all, your listeners should know about the 988 number. It's the emergency number to call for mental health crisis. Many people are familiar with 911 for general emergencies. 988 has been rolled out over the last couple of years nationally, and it's a hotline staffed 24/7 where a person that's in mental health crisis, or somebody, if you're worried about somebody that's in mental health crisis, you can call and be connected to a live person who can provide emergency resources.
Thank you for that information, Doctor.
Yeah, thank you. I will definitely let her know that 988 is an outlet that she can call anytime she's feeling down. And I believe that number runs 24 hours, 7 days a week, and she can just give them a call anytime she's feeling down. You know, as a friend, I wish I can do more, you know, take a lot off of her. Unfortunately, I'm limited because of, you know, I'm overwhelmed with my life as well, but I'm trying, you know, putting things aside. Sure. But it just hurts my heart that she even thought about the suicide and want to kill herself and don't want to live. It just made me sad. And like, what can I do for this woman, this young woman that took care of everyone her whole life as far as nursing people back into, you know, worked at nursing homes. Did she work the COVID unit?
Right.
You know, she sacrificed herself just to work the COVID unit and did long hours. And now she doesn't deserve this. And this is, you know, for me, it just made me sad. Right. Like, here it is, a good person that doesn't deserve this to happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a hero, and you want to be her hero. Yeah, her hero.
Yes, exactly.
Which sounds to me like you are, given how much you care about her.
Yeah,
I do. And is what are some of the barriers that people face in getting help in mental health? Because they feel like they can just call a friend. Like, what else can they do outside of calling 911? Like, what is available to them that they don't know? If you can share that with our viewers, just in case there's someone on this line that doesn't know what to do, you know, and what type of access they have out there in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. You know, there's, we're lucky in that there are so many mental health resources available. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of myths out there, and secondhand misinformation that there's no treatment, you can't get care anywhere. But there are lots of treatment options, and they range from everything from different types of talk therapy, what we also call psychotherapy, to medications, but also a ton of very simple wellness activities that people can do on their own that don't require a prescription or, you know, going to see a doctor or that even cost any money. Things like working on your sleep hygiene, getting good restful sleep every night, getting regular exercise, which has been shown scientifically to have incredible benefits and actually treat symptoms of mild depression and anxiety. No side effects, usually free. Of course, some people go to the gym, that kind of stuff. But yoga, meditation, mindfulness, breath work, these are all things that you can search online and go to organizations that are really reputable, like Mental Health America, MHA.org, or the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in the Department of Human Services, SAMHSA, hsa.gov. And they have resources for not only about things that you can do on your own, but also how to access treatment in your area. There's two other really important resources and ways to get connected to care that I think your listeners should know about. The first is that if you have any kind of insurance, whether that's commercial insurance through your employer or medical assistance, what's called in Pennsylvania is called Health Choices, look at your insurance card. And on there, there should be a 1-800 number. Sometimes there's a separate 1-800 number for mental health or addiction services. Call that number. Somebody should be on that number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Talk about what you're experiencing, what kind of help you're seeking. And that customer service representative, that's certainly true for our health plan, UPMC Health Plan and Community Care Behavioral Health, will work with you to find a resource. And in some cases, it can help you get connected over the phone with the intake team to get your appointment scheduled. Okay. If you don't have insurance in Pennsylvania, every county in Pennsylvania has a mental health resource number.
Oh.
So in Philadelphia County, it's the Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services, DBHIDS. And they have a website by that name. And they have links to how to access free or low-cost care within the city and county of Philadelphia. And the same is true for the surrounding counties. Each have information and resources on their website. So regardless of whether you have insurance or not, there are an array of treatment resources, both in terms of what we would think about as traditional mental health, seeing a psychiatrist or psychologist or a therapist, but also tools that you can use and get started on right now to help improve your mental health.
That's awesome information.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I wasn't aware that there were free services out there. Me too had at one point in my life had to seek help, counseling and therapy. And I didn't have insurance. I had to pay out of pocket. I didn't know there were such, free services out there. I thought you either had to have insurance or you had to have medical assistance. And it wasn't no cash.
Medical assistance, yeah.
And so I wasn't aware of it was free, but thank you for that. Now that I know. Oh, Monica or Maisha, do you have any questions for
sure?
Yes. She had mentioned earlier, how her friend did expressed to her that she wanted to, that she felt like she didn't want to live anymore. Oftentimes we hear like someone, died or committed suicide and nobody even realized that, they were even depressed or had any issues. I know you did say like, look out for like things that, that people normally, would do that they don't do. But sometimes you can't, you just don't know, mm-hmm. How do you, is there, they say that people normally leave signs that that's what they want to do. What type of signs like do you look for if you,
Well, thank you for asking this question. Unfortunately, most suicides are impulsive acts and it's oftentimes very hard to detect when somebody might actually attempt suicide. That being said, there are some behaviors that can really raise the level of concern that somebody might be thinking about it. One of those is when somebody starts to give away lots of objects or things that are important to them. Uh-huh. And that can be a sign or indication that somebody is considering suicide and they're looking to get rid of things. They feel that they'll no longer have any need for them.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, when people start to write or post publicly, sometimes on social media, sometimes just through personal correspondences, and start to question, the value of life, the meaning of life. So anything that really centers around this idea of hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big differentiators that people who have survived their suicide attempt often talk about is that they did it because they felt like there were no other alternatives. There was no way that they were ever going to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So that hopelessness and that helplessness, that can oftentimes precede a suicide attempt. So when you hear about somebody talking in that way, where they sound like they've given up hope, and they just don't believe that it can ever get bad, not that it's really, you know, be really bad, but I mean, when they really seem to give up hope, that can be a warning sign as well.
Okay.
Other changes that elevate risk, but don't necessarily mean that somebody is, you know, likely to about to commit suicide. But we know that increasing use of alcohol, misuse of alcohol or illicit drugs, places people at a higher risk because it impairs judgment and it makes people more likely to do something impulsive and irrational without a lot of thought. And certainly a lot of people who have been trusted and have died. And it's always a question mark about whether it was an attempted suicide or whether somebody, you know, the death was accidental, whether through a drunk driving incident or an overdose on a prescription or illicit drug. You know, was it a suicide attempt or was somebody, was it an accidental death?
Right.
In some ways, these things don't matter that much because you've lost that person. The
right.
point is that all of these things represent a pattern of risky behavior. And when you notice somebody that you care about is engaging in them, it's really time to intervene.
Okay.
I have a question. This is Mindy. What happens if you know someone that's in care, is under a mental health advisor, and they utilize that as an excuse of every time you try? So, for example, you have a 14, 15-year-old girl that's homeschooled. And she tells her teachers that every time she gets in trouble in school, she tells them she wants to kill herself. So, of course, the teachers call and you have to call crisis. Crisis come involved. And then she is admitted into a mental health awareness center. And then she does well, goes, you know, fine. I'm speaking from example. I'm speaking from experience. And then when she gets home, everything is fine. But when she's not doing her schoolwork and now you're pointing out the things that she's not doing, you utilize the word of I want to kill myself. And now we have to get crisis and everything back involved. So I have someone that's going through this with their child. So how can we differentiate from the seriousness of the situation? Is she really going to kill herself or is she just using this as a crutch? You know, because every time she says she's going to kill herself, everybody comes to her aid and baby her and say all. And then we got all this attention from the therapist, the counselor, and everybody is walking on eggshells now because we don't want her to kill herself. But this is an outlet that she utilized every time she get in trouble in school. So we don't know if the seriousness of her mental health, is it behavior or is it mental?
Right.
Yeah. Well, this can be a really challenging situation, and obviously not, you know, commenting on the specifics of the example that you raised. What I would say generally is that it's in any situation where somebody seems to be cycling through a pattern of behavior that generates a lot of activity, like that, a lot of interest from people, whether it's at school or family or in professional circles, whatever the case might be, is that it's important to understand that regardless of what the underlying cause is, that's a person that's in distress who's trying to communicate something. And they might use different language, you know, they might refer to it in a different way or a different symptom. But something is happening for that person and they are trying to get a need met. Maybe that need is the attention of people that they care about because inside they don't feel lovable or they're worried that they're not important, special, or lovable enough. And that they're afraid that if they don't say these things or do these things, that they might be forgotten or neglected. They might be somebody frightened about whether they'll be successful in whatever they're doing. And that if they were recovered from their mental health challenge, that a lot of expectations would be placed on them. And they're worried that they won't be able to meet those expectations. And so there's a fear of improving, a fear of quote unquote getting better, because then maybe I won't have an excuse you know, for why I can't get this done or do my job or be a good parent or be a good student, whatever the case is. A lot of people aren't necessarily aware of those thoughts, but they're just aware of the fact that when people are expecting something of them that they're afraid they can't do, that it's anxiety provoking, it's frightening. And sometimes they will kind of take what we think of as a few steps backwards. But what they're really doing is just kind of human nature, right? They're just doing something that helps a bad feeling go away. So to support that person, it's oftentimes really helpful to try to understand what's that bad feeling that they're going through. You know, is it fear? Is it sadness? Is it anxiety? And the sooner you can talk about that feeling, the sooner you can come up with healthier solutions to help that person move forward in their life. Because until there's some alternative, they're going to keep going with what they know, which is, you know, in the example you shared, somebody talking, you know, about the mental health issue, talking about maybe hurting themselves, because they know it's very predictable. They know what will happen next.
Right.
And as human beings, we're not really actually big fans of the unknown. Like, we like a little bit of certainty and predictable. You know, you hit a light switch, you have the light to go on. You know, you get down to the train at 8:27, you hope the train's there at 8:27. You know, you give somebody flowers, it makes them smile. Like, we want to know there's a cause and effect in the world and there's an order to things. It's very comforting to us. When there's not, it's pretty scary. And so right now you got an example where somebody is going through something. They're using a behavior that they know causes a whole series of reactions that gets them out of an uncomfortable situation. Got to figure out what that underlying emotion is and come up with healthier solutions to support the person.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, because it gave us a clear understanding on how to handle it going forward. Right. Because her parents was kind of passive to it. We like, oh, she's just acting out. Every time we tell her to do homework or tell her she will take her cell phone, she always, you know, resort into saying, I'm gonna kill myself. And she's online because the school can see everything that she does online, and they get concerned and they end up calling everyone. Where is she and who is she on by herself? And it's like they push this panic button and everybody is now panicking. Yeah.
Right.
And it's every time she has to fulfill, she has an obligation that she needs to fulfill and she don't want to do it. And she did express, I'm depressed. I can't stay focused. I can't focus on one thing. I don't know why I'm depressed. You guys keep asking me why I'm depressed. I don't know why. This is just something that just happened. I don't understand it. And she's isolated herself. She doesn't have friends. She always in her room and she always on like TikTok, and she's not a sociable person. So is this little girl that's crying wolf, or is this really she's going through a depression? So we didn't know how to differentiate, you know, we didn't know if this was something that was, she was going through a cycle, or this is something that she punishing us and say, I'm gonna call crisis.
Right.
And because every time we call crisis, she's put in the home and she's happy. She's there for 2 weeks. She comes back out. And this is only during the school year. Like in the summertime, we don't hear her saying, you know, she's going to kill herself because she has no obligations that she has to fulfill. School is now over and she has all this time to her hands. But when school comes back in, we right back where we started with her. So, but you did shine a light of how, you know, she really can be depressed. This is something that, you know, she does, and maybe she can't fulfill her obligations because she don't have the mental capacity to focus on her job or her work from school. Mm-hmm. So all this time we thinking that, you know, she's playing with us.
Right.
I'm there to help with her parents and get a clear understanding of what's going on. So I'm always going to be that support system. And at one point I'm like, she's playing with you guys.
Right.
No, I don't understand. Every time she has to do a school where she's playing with you guys, she's playing the school, she's playing the counselors, and she's playing her parents. But you just shed a light of and for someone to keep doing this, it has to be some type of mental illness going on with her.
Right. Thank you again.
So thank you so much.
And good luck to her. Good luck to and the family.
Yeah. And it's sad because, you know, I was reading the reports of, it's like 57.8 million people that's reported that's mental health in adults and in children, like one every five children is going to go through the depression. And it's something that's being passive, especially with our culture, you know, it's passed on like, oh, you're just bad or you're just, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, it's not taken, you know, to the heart. It's taken lightly where we say, just go to your room and figure it out. And that's not how we should respond to children because of the suicide rate in children, of bullying, cyberbullying going on. And you know, I have our parents listening to, you know, the station today and give them an insight of how to handle her going forward. Because we have everybody at her beck and call. Everyone. We have grandparents, therapists, counselors. You know, she has weekly meetings, but the one thing we don't want to do is say brush it off and thinking she's cool and go in her room and there she is hung, you know, hang herself because she did at one point had like a string hanging in a closet showing that this is what I'm going to do. Like she had a whole plan.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
Oh, my goodness.
It's scary.
It's very scary.
Yes.
I mean, I'll say she's fortunate in that you can hear that she has lots and lots of people in her life that care about her. And she's fortunate to have those supports in her life, which many people do not. I think the questions that you raise are what's really driving this? I'd be really curious about what school's like for her because and what her experience is like there, other things going on academically, socially, or in other areas of her life that make school really challenging because it sounds like you know, not so much of an issue in the summer. And so sometimes trying to figure out kind of what the real driver is behind some of the behaviors can be really useful. But usually the more direct the conversation, the quicker the route to getting a solution put into place. So good luck to her and good luck to the family, to you all.
Thank you. I appreciate your insight on everything. Yes. We have to break for 2 minutes, if you don't mind.
Sure thing.
Brewerytown Construction LLC is a family-owned general contracting company known across the Philadelphia and tri-state area for completing high-quality home renovations and larger commercial building projects. If you are looking to renovate your home or business, contact Brewerytown Construction Company at 888-572-8696 or at brewerytownconstruction.com.
Junkstar is a professional and reliable company dedicated to providing efficient and eco-friendly solutions for all your junk removal needs. With years of experience in the industry, we understand the importance of keeping your space clean and clutter-free. Our team of trained professionals is committed to delivering top-notch service, ensuring that your debris, trash furniture, or junk is removed promptly and responsibly. We handle a wide range of items, including old furniture, appliances, electronics, construction debris, yard waste, and much more. At Junkstar, we prioritize sustainability and strive to minimize our environmental impact. We employ environmentally friendly disposal methods, recycling and donating items whenever possible. Rest assured that your unwanted items will be handled with care and disposed of responsibly. Customer satisfaction is our utmost priority, and we aim to exceed your expectations. Our team is punctual, courteous, and equipped with the necessary tools and equipment to complete any job efficiently. We offer competitive pricing and upfront quotes so you can trust that you're receiving fair and transparent service. Whether you need residential or commercial junk removal services, Junkstar is here to assist you. Contact us today to schedule your hassle-free junk removal and experience the convenience of a clutter-free space. Call 888-572-8696. That's 888-572-8696.
And welcome back to Let's Talk with Mindy, Monica, and Maisha. And so we have Dr. Herford on the phone. And I did have one question to ask you. Okay, are you able to hear me, sir?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I had my microphone turned down. My family, we had someone that was clearly in a mental health crisis.
And I found that we found it hard to, you know, the term 302, like to get someone committed and to get them assistance. Why is it so hard to do that?
So in Pennsylvania, 302 refers to the specific section of the Mental Health Procedures Act, where it describes the procedures that somebody can get involuntarily committed to for psychiatric evaluation and admission up to 5 days. So in different places, it's called different things. But as you mentioned, in Pennsylvania, it's called 302. And part of the reason that that act was created and that section was created is because if you go back to earlier parts in the 20th century, there were some really terrible abuses of the mental health system. And people with serious mental illnesses, and sometimes people without serious mental illnesses, were oftentimes confined to state hospitals or asylums, as we once called them, and not just for days, but for months, and in some cases, even years.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were committed back then, they were really deprived of their civil rights. Oftentimes, they were, in the eyes of the law, not seen or treated as having a say in the course of their lives. And part of the reason that the Mental Health Procedures Act was created was to help make sure that that system could not be abused, that somebody could not, for example, have somebody put away in a mental health hospital against their will for a long period of time. Some people feel that the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction, that it's too hard to get somebody into care or treatment. But anybody is able to file a 302 petition. And again, you can call your county mental health office in Philadelphia, that's the Department of Behavioral Health. And a mental health advocate will talk you through the process over the phone, take down a statement, and they can create that 302 petition. Now, that still needs for the person to have an evaluation by a psychiatrist if it's upheld. And that psychiatrist will then make a determination about whether the person should be admitted to a hospital for treatment and observation for a period of up to 5 days.
Okay.
After which, the treatment team working with that person can then decide if the time needs to be extended or the person could be discharged, whatever the case may be. But you really, your question really gets to the heart of an important issue, which is you know somebody that you care about is dealing with a serious emotional or mental health crisis. How can you help them when they aren't open to getting that help in the first place? Right,
exactly.
And so the 302 process is one of the mechanisms, but there are a number of crisis response centers all over the Southeast Pennsylvania region that have mental health crisis workers who can help intervene without necessarily involuntarily committing them or doing a 302. They can, and some of the teams work by phone, some are what they call mobile crisis workers. So they will drive to a location and work with whether it's a child, adolescent, or an adult, and try and, if possible, diffuse the mental health crisis right there and then and there, offer services in helping to connect that person to outpatient treatment if that's appropriate. In some cases, the person feels like, this really is bad, and they voluntarily decide to go to the hospital. So they don't have to be voluntarily committed, which is usually the best outcome. Somebody consents to the treatment. And then in rare cases, if it's clear that this person is a danger to themselves or others in the immediate future, then a 302 petition can be filed.
Okay.
That's awesome information. Thank you so much for that information, Dr. Harford. Aisha, do you have any questions before we end this interview?
No.
Dr. Harford, thank you so much for taking the time out
to speak on
mental health awareness. Being so May has, is the month to speak on, and you had clarified a lot of things that cover mental health awareness during this call. Thank you so much for your time. And you're from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, correct?
That's right.
Awesome. And I was told that, and you can tell me if this is true or not, that Pennsylvania is the number is number eight in the nation in providing quality mental health services and number one in the nation for youth mental health care. Is that true?
Yeah.
That's what I read.
The latest ranking. No, you're exactly right. That was the 22 rankings. And got some good news. The 23 rankings just got released, like super hot off the presses. And we've actually moved up a couple more slots. I believe we're number six now in the nation. And when you combine all of the rankings from Mental Health America, which is really a leading mental health organization, nonprofit, in the country. And it speaks to the amazing commitment of all of the behavioral health, mental health providers in Pennsylvania who work around the clock, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year to offer those important and life-saving mental health services to Pennsylvanians. So, you know, this Mental Health Awareness Month, it should be not just about starting conversations around mental health, checking in with yourself about mental health, but maybe take the opportunity to thank somebody that's in the field, in the profession, because their services have never been more important and they're working. So there's always more to do, but it was really, I think, very rewarding for everybody in the field to see Pennsylvania recognized as a leader in the nation when it comes to quality mental health care.
I agree. And I thank you so much for your services. I believe that people just like you get a physical every year as far as your physical health. You should also get a yearly mental health evaluation.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you may be depressed and not even know it. You may need absolutely. Help and not know it.
Right.
And it's some things that you touch point on. And I'm like, wait a minute, I do that sometimes. And sometimes I do feel depressed. And sometimes, you know, I go to my friends, but sometimes friends could be opinionated or judgmental and you mm-hmm. just want that professional, you know, help. And that's what I think that I'm going to do today. I'm going to get some professional help.
That's great to hear.
Take me with you.
this conversation definitely encouraged me. And maybe I need to see a therapist.
Well, then it's been a good group therapy session.
Send her to Bill.
Thank you so much. And again, we all here thank and our viewers, thank you for all that you do to make for the awareness of mental health awareness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You have an amazing day. And thank you so much from WWDB. Bye.
Bye now.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us, Let's Talk with Mindy, Monica, and Maisha. And Dr. Harford, thank you so much for joining us today. We had an amazing time talking about mental health. Everyone, check on a friend, a family, or anyone, or yourself. Get some help. If you need, you can call. If you feel yourself depressed, lonely, suicidal, dial 988. They're available to you 24 hours a day. Everyone, have an amazing day.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your week.